This is the Mormon Mixed Faith Marriage Podcast with Certified Life Coach Brooke Booth, episode number 126. Way back at episode number 44, I introduced the concept of codependency and I talked about what it looked like. And at the time I said I would probably talk about it again. Now we're doing it. I have not forgotten. Here is the next installment in a podcast series on codependency. Where I get this information from, I mentioned in podcast number 44, is a book by Melody Beatty called Codependency No More, where she talks about defining codependency and her program or steps for stepping outside of codependency and not becoming or being so codependent yourself. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to review her definition, give some examples, and then we're going to go through her steps for stepping outside of codependency. And of course, I'm going to talk about this through the lens of a mixed faith marriage. So let's start talking about, just to review, what do we even mean when we say codependency? Like, what does this mean? How does it look? And then we'll talk about changing this pattern of behavior. So here's one example of a definition used in the book. An emotional, psychological, and behavioral condition that develops as a result of an individual's prolonged exposure to and practice of a set of oppressive rules, the rules which prevent the open expression of feelings, as well as the direct discussion of personal and interpersonal problems. Now, this is a really interesting definition to me because in my coaching practice, I advocate for processing and expressing emotions. I advocate that's a really important part of relationships and creating good relationships. That part of the definition really caught my attention. Let me give you an example of something she shares to sort of make this idea a little bit more concrete, because I realize the idea of codependency is a hard one to wrap your head around. It's anecdotes and examples, I think, help provide sort of the structure to really understand what it is we're talking about. So let me read this. This is from her book. They tried to help in ways that didn't help. They've said yes when they meant no. They've tried to make other people see things their way. They have bent over backwards to avoid hurting people's feelings, and in so doing, they have hurt themselves. They have been afraid to trust their feelings. They have relived lies and felt betrayed. They have wanted to get even and punish others. They have struggled for their rights while other people said they did not have any. They have worn sackcloth because they did not believe they deserved silk. I think this is a very helpful encapsulation of the idea we're talking about here. I'll give you some more ideas. This is like people who struggle and exhibit a lot of codependency characteristics tend to be more passive in their lives. They seek other people to provide guidance and direction and give answers. They're very busy taking care of other people that they often are not taking care of themselves. Mothers do this one a lot. This is something women have been literally socialized to do. And I want to point out that, like, everybody's codependent to a certain degree, and that's perfectly fine. It's just sometimes it gets to be so much that it can cause problems. And when you're here's another example, being dependent on another person, on other people, dependent on their moods, dependent on their behavior, dependent on their well-being, dependent on their love in order for you to feel okay about yourself. These were interesting to me as I thought more about it. Appearing strong, often codependents appear very strong, but they are dependent. They look strong, but they are helpless. They appear controlling, and they may be controlling whatever small fiefdom they may have, but they are in fact ultimately controlled. This is something like that I see in my own personal experience with codependency. Is I do appear in many ways to be quite strong, and I look strong, and I appear controlling in many regards in certain aspects of my home life. But as I have unpacked my own codependency, I have learned that in fact, I am feel helpless and I feel controlled and I am dependent in many regards, despite that sort of outward expression of strength. Okay. Codependency is, in a nutshell, when you put other people's emotions, needs, wants, dreams, desires, comfort, stability, whatever it may be, above your own, where you sacrifice your own, you don't take care of your own needs, dreams, desires, responsibilities, all of those things. Instead, you take care of other people's for them. That's how I like to think of codependency. That's the definition I tend to use. What happens is you neglect to live your own life. You neglect to fulfill your own responsibilities because you're so busy taking care of others. So let's talk about how to address codependency. And again, I reference you back to the first podcast to get more in depth about what codependency is. I want to spend the majority of this podcast on how to address codependency, how to unpack it and do less of it in your life. You're never going to mitigate it to where it's 0%. Okay, that's not the goal. We just want to be aware of our tendencies and then make conscious decisions on how we might want to mitigate or address it. But our goal here is not to eliminate it 100% because I don't think that's realistic. Okay, the number one thing she says is detachment. She says we need to learn to detach. And she makes this point that I think is spot on, is that all of her other tools here or points are really just other ways of saying detach. And I think she's right about that. And so some things will sound redundant, because really we're just going to say detach, 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 but we'll say it in different ways with different examples. So let's talk about what detachment is. That's when you feel like you can't live your own life, feel your own feelings, solve your own problems, because you're so attached to the other person. So let me say it this way. We cannot live our own lives, feel our own feelings, and solve our own problems until we've detached from the object of our obsession. And a lot of times to understand detachment, we need to understand attachment. Attachment's excessively worried about a problem or person, controlling of other people or the environment, where you react instead of acting thoughtfully. You're emotionally dependent on those around you. You know, if you're not good, I have failed, is sometimes how we look at it with parenting. And then we caretake people around us. And this looks like rescuing and enabling. And we'll talk more about what that looks like as we talk through unpacking codependency. Let's talk about it now just through the lens of a mixed faith marriage here for a minute. So like, let's talk about how obsession looks like in a mixed faith marriage, because you cannot live your own life or feel your own feelings or solve your own problems until you have detached from the object of your obsession. And the object of your obsession is often the things you're attached to, right? Where you're excessively worrying, you're trying to control and you're reacting and you're caretaking. So obsession can look like a variety of different things. Here are some examples. You can obsess over your own faith, your own experience with religion. You can obsess over your spouse's faith or lack of faith and their choices. Something I see a lot is we obsess over our children and their choices and what they're taught or not taught. We obsess over the teaching of children, the messages they receive. We obsess over how our family looks and how it's perceived by others. I know this is something I certainly obsessed about, was needing to create, you know, just the right kind of gospel-centered home. I truly obsessed about it. And it created this kind of attachment that she describes in this book. I certainly obsessed over relationships, as being a wife, a mother, a daughter of God. That might be something you can relate to. And these obsessions keep you so busy that you don't live your own life. Your over-involvement in them keep you in a state of like hypervigilance, of always needing to do more and always needing to go the second mile and always needing to do that next thing on the checklist. So I'm just, my own experience, and yours might be very different, but I was always highly concerned about getting my visiting teaching done, which I know I know they now call ministering, attending the temple, reading my scriptures, saying my prayers, teaching family home evening. Like I was very hyper-focused on these things, obsessed even, attached to these things. And they can be good things in moderation. Don't think that these are bad things, but I was certainly obsessed about doing them because I wanted to have that gospel-centered home. That I would get to this point of over-involvement that she talks about, where I no longer had energy to think about what I want or what would actually fulfill me in my life and how I could create that and how I could do more of what I loved and what satisfied and fulfilled me. Those were not questions I ever asked myself. In fact, I would tell myself that doing these things was in fact satisfying and fulfilling, even when it was not. Okay, that's an example of attachment. And again, the point is you need to learn to detach in order to let go of codependency tendencies. And so she gives some examples of stop worrying about relationships. So this might look like stop worrying about the relationship with God, your husband, your bishop, your parents, your board members. And we do this so that you can think about you and your relationship with you and how you want to be living your life. Instead of focusing on the other person and solving their problems, because the premise is like the idea, and I teach this so often to clients, that that other person, husband, mom, bishop, God even, they can solve their own problems. And they're in charge of solving their own problems. And they're supposed to solve their own problems. So that you can solve your own problems. You don't need to solve theirs for them. They can do that for themselves. And then the other step here is to disengage from others' lives and responsibilities. They can live their own life and they can see to their own responsibilities. For some of you, this may seem obvious. For some of you, this may seem breathtaking. When I first heard these concepts, it was breathtaking. I never once considered that other people were supposed to solve their own problems. I always, always believed that I was supposed to solve them for them. So she says to detach, stop worrying about your relationships. The second thing she says around detachment is to live in the now. And this is something you hear a lot with mindfulness. Not to be obsessed about fears of the future or regrets of the past, but finding what she calls a healthy neutrality. And I want to acknowledge, like, there are always going to be issues and problems. They're always going to be there. And the point is, you just don't have to solve them all today. And this may look like you need to grieve for loss and take care of your own actual responsibilities. And this doesn't mean you don't love people. Yes, you're going to love people. But you're also going to hold yourself in high esteem, and you're also going to take care of yourself. I see this a lot with post-Mormons is they get really hyper-focused in regretting past decisions, regretting decisions around alcohol or sex or dating or being so straight-laced. And it can be helpful to acknowledge that and mourn that and grieve that and process that. We just don't want to obsess about it because then we start to slip into codependency again. I've certainly regretted having so many kids, and I don't want to obsess about that so I become attached to my regret, but I do want to acknowledge it and process it and then move on. I definitely have had obsessions about fears of how the kids will turn out, fears around the marriage. And again, living in the now and just accepting things as they are today is a really great way to detach from some of those fears and obsessions. Okay, the second thing she talks about in the book, so detachment is number one. The second thing she talks about is don't be reactionary. Now, I want to be clear that when we're talking about reactionary things, it's overreacting, but it also can be underreacting. So the basic idea is don't react to others' thoughts, feelings, behaviors, problems, because when we do, when we're in that constant plugged in state, plugged into other people's thoughts, feelings, behaviors, problems, it keeps us in a high state, this like over functioning state where adrenaline is flowing, muscles are tensed, and we're ready to react. And I have certainly been in this position. I know what she's describing here, and we take things too seriously. And yes, sometimes that means the church. We think other people's behaviors, their thoughts, their feelings, their problems reflect somehow on our own self-worth. Whether it's our spouse or our children or our community, we think that that reflects on our own self-worth. And so we are reactionary when we see something we don't like. I'll give you some examples. If your husband's quiet after church, a reactionary thought might be, oh, they talked about Think Celestial and he thinks I'm dangerous. Or if your wife wants to talk about tithing, a reactionary approach might be, she hates me and wants a divorce. I don't want to say that like you never are going to go here, but it's just helpful to see that these are reactionary and they can show symptoms and signs of codependency. So she gives four steps for how not to overreact. And these are things I teach all the time. So I want to reiterate them here. One, awareness. Recognize when you're overreacting. Recognize your patterns of behavior and thought and feeling. I teach this all the time to my clients. Two, calm yourself down. Like, learn how to calm down your nervous system. Learn how to process your emotions. Learn how to find like homeostasis again in your body. And then number three, examine what happened. This is what I call cognitive work. Use your prefrontal cortex and look at what happened. Decide what went wrong and how you want to approach it next time. And then number four, I really like how she says this. She says, number four, figure out what you need to do to take care of yourself. This to me is completely revolutionary. And I love how she says this. Not what you need to do to take care of your spouse, not what you need to do to take care of your marriage, what or your ward or your bishop or your mom, but what do you need to do to take care of yourself? I think that's not a question we ask ourselves often enough, primarily out of fear of being selfish. But I want you to consider that this is not being selfish at all. Okay, number three. So number one is detach. Number two is stop being reactionary or don't be reactionary. Number three is let go of control. This one's hard. I'm not going to even pretend. Letting go of other people's business. Stop trying to change other people. You cannot control their faith or their deconstruction. I know it feels like it's directly impacting you, and it might very well be, but it's still not something you can control. Other people's business is their own faith, their own journey. And when we try to change other people, we are no longer focusing on ourselves, our own responsibilities, our own choices, our own faith journey, if you will. Okay, number four, stop rescuing and caretaking. Stop anticipating needs. Stop fixing other people's problems. These are examples of rescuing and caretaking. When we fix other people's problems, we enable them so that they don't have to fix it themselves. When we anticipate other people's needs, they don't have to anticipate their own needs. It's a type of enabling. Stop doing something the other person is capable of doing. If you want to do it as a generous gift, please do it. I'm all for giving gifts, but a lot of times with codependency, we do it because we don't think they're capable and we think we need to come and rescue them. But if they truly are capable, it's good to let other people take care of themselves. Stop meeting needs without being asked. Stop doing more than your fair share of the work. Stop not asking. So this is a double negative, but follow me. I'll just say it in a positive way. Ask for what you need and you want. Stop not communicating your needs and your wants. Ask for what you need and you want. It's your job to bring up your needs and wants and issues, and it's not your job to guess theirs. Rescuing and caretaking is such an interesting dynamic because it creates a cycle where, like a victim-villain type of a cycle. It's like, well, you can't do this for yourself, so I'm going to need to do it for you. Or I should do this for you. That's my job. And that's where they're sort of like the victims and we're coming in to rescue them. But then if they don't show appropriate amount of gratitude or give us rescuing in turn, we now become the victims. You're never grateful for all I do. I do so much around here and nobody appreciates me. There's certainly a victim villain dynamic involved in the rescuing and caretaking. So think about how rescuing may be showing up here. Are you trying to rescue your spouse still in the church or rescue family members who have left? Rescuing is something to be really wary of because it often just leads to a really big pile of resentment. And then we neglect taking care of ourselves. Okay, next step she talks about is realize you can be alone, that you can be okay alone. Yeah, I want to be really careful. This doesn't mean you have to leave the relationship or end the relationship. But I think it's still really important to realize that you can be okay being alone. You can live without this person. You can live without your dependence on them or institution or whatever it may be. So often we're dependent on another's approval, on their presence, on their need for us. And that's why it can be important to develop and realize that you can be okay alone, that they can be okay alone too. Sometimes we need them so much because we're afraid nobody else will love us. Really learning that you can be okay alone, something I think that happens in a mixed faith marriage in many regards, is that you learn you can be okay alone in your faith journey. I think when people realize that, they step into this and they realize that it's okay and they don't need that external validation from their spouse, but that they can be okay alone pursuing their own faith journey and their own relationship with God. Or not. Okay, the next one she talks about, number six, is live your own life. And she presents this question, what do I need to do to take care of myself? Again, like I said, many of these are redundant, but I think the redundancy can be really helpful. What do I need to do to take care of myself? It might be go to church. It might be stop going to church. It might be taking a nap. It might be getting more done. It might be getting a job. It might be working less. It might be reading your scriptures more. It might be never reading your scriptures ever again. What do I need to do to take care of yourself? Live your own life because nobody else is going to do it for you. Number seven, have a love affair with yourself. A lot of these concepts are really intertwined with self-perception, self-esteem, how you view yourself. And so this idea of having a love affair is tied into stop disliking yourself or judging yourself or thinking you're bad or you're wrong or you're selfish or that you're not important or thinking that your ideas or your desires or your choices are somehow inferior. And this often sounds like shaming yourself or shooting on yourself. I should do this. I should not do this. Because what's interesting is when we don't like ourselves, when we don't approve of ourselves, we're not going to let ourselves enjoy a lovely life because we don't deserve it. So really learning to love yourself enough to take care of yourself and enough to live your own life is an important part of stepping out of codependency. Number eight is acceptance. And I like to talk about acceptance in terms of accepting the reality. A lot of times we resist reality and we fight against what is happening and what is the reality and truth of our lives. Acceptance is about leaving denial behind and learning to deal with change and to be okay with change. This might look like accepting the loss of a dream, of accepting the loss of a same faith marriage, accepting the loss of raising a family, active in the LDS church. It's accepting many things that you don't have anymore now that you're in a mixed faith marriage. So you might need to really walk thoroughly and completely through the grief process so you can arrive at acceptance. Okay, number nine, feel your own feelings. Again, something I teach a lot. When we ignore them and push them away, we really do lose an important part of ourselves. and learning how to be okay with our feelings and feel them and knowing they're valid and important and worth expressing and worth sharing is a skill that many of us, myself included, need to learn. Number 10 is anger, and this is super similar to feeling your own feelings. And I think she demarcates this separately because anger's, I think we need extra permission to feel our anger feelings. We need extra permission to be okay that we sometimes feel angry. Like a lot of times we don't think it's allowed or okay to feel angry, and it's okay. It's part of the human experience. Key number 11, you can think. You can trust yourself. You can start listening to your wants and your needs. You can stop asking permission. You can have an opinion. You can change your mind, and then you can change it again. And this is a lot of what happens in a mixed faith marriage. You can trust yourself in your faith journey, whether that's staying in the church or leaving it. You can have an opinion about your spouse's faith. You can change your mind at any point. You don't have to have permission from anybody. Okay, number 12, set your own goals. But let me just tell you a quick story about myself. When we were maybe married 5 years or so, my husband's like, what are your goals? You know, it was probably January, and this was just what the topic of conversation was. And I remember being like, I don't really have any. I don't have a bucket list. Because so much of how I had internalized my own messaging was, you get married and you have kids and then you endure to the end. That's how I internalized it. And so I didn't really have any life goals beyond that. I mean, I had already achieved an education, so I pretty much felt like that was that. And I felt like having goals would somehow detract from, you know, the things I was supposed to be doing. And so I didn't have any. And I think that's a really interesting symptom of people who have codependent tendencies. It was certainly one of mine. Number 13, communication. And I think really being able to communicate stems directly from not liking and trusting ourselves. Let me share with you what she says communication is. Be direct and not indirect. It's just something I teach all the time. Talk about problems, express feelings, say what you think, and express your wants and needs. I think this is a great synopsis of what communication is. Let me repeat it again. Be direct and not indirect. Talk about problems, express feelings, say what you think, and express your wants and needs. If you learn nothing more in your life about communication and you do these things, you will have a great deal of success in your communication. The reason I'm kind of laughing is I did not learn this about communication, and it was something I had to really develop as I became an adult. I had to learn that it's okay to be direct and not indirect. I had to learn that it's okay to express my feelings, especially the negative ones, you know. Footnote back to the anger one. It's okay to say what I think and have an opinion, even if my husband might have a different opinion, or even worse, the leaders of the church. And it's okay to express my wants and my needs and my desires and my goals. It's okay. These were things that were uphill lessons for me to learn. Okay, those are her steps for overcoming codependency. And I wanted to share them because I think she's got some really, I think she's right about it. I think codependency is something that is very common in a mixed faith marriage. And I think we come by it very honestly. I think that there are a lot of social and cultural reasons why we're codependent. So it can be really helpful to start to have a list of ways of developing ourselves and developing our skills and in our own personal self-development so we can start to unpack that if we want to. Because if you don't, you don't have to. Now, if you think you're really struggling with codependency tendencies, read her book, see if that helps. Get some coaching. Reach out and get some coaching. It can be a great way to see things that you're just not seeing because it's just so familiar. Go ahead and go to brookboothcoaching.com if you wanted to see ways of working with me. And I'll catch you in the next podcast. Wishing you the very best.